Welcome to the Pop Culture Show with Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby.
For those listening around the world just joining us, welcome. It's Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby. And by the way, if you're just joining us, you might want to go backwards. Some pretty incredible guests over the last couple of weeks, and we've had a lot of fun. Christian Bush from Sugarland, Lisa Loeb, Butch Walker, Goldberg, who all of a sudden a lot of wrestling people just found out he was on. They're showing up. Joe Gatto from Practical Jokers, Air Supplies, Russell Hitchcock, Collective Souls, Ed Roland. So a lot of shows wherever you get your podcasts. And today we have Dr. Oz. Dr. Oz.
That's a big guest.
I like him.
Do we have to wear a mask during this interview?
Yeah.
Or are we okay with that?
Have to wear a mask. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Dr. Oz will be coming up in just a little bit. You can catch us on the iHeartRadio app, the Pandora app, Teslas, Buicks now, right, Cubby? We're still going strong.
Going strong in Buicks and lime green Pacers.
You guys have a good week?
Had a great week. You know, Cubby, we never had a chance to tell you about the weekend. Barnes and his beautiful wife, Heather, were here.
I know, and I really was missing out. And tell me how big your farm is, by the way, because you talked about
big.
Your farm. It's big, right?
Yeah, 40 acres. And we came out here for a couple of nights. Barnes, Cubby, you have no idea how dedicated he is to this show.
It's work, work, work all the time, I'm guessing. It's
There were a couple of days where I was like, yeah, let's go out. You know, you can pet the horse and stuff like that. Barnes diligently sitting in my living room editing this podcast for the Pop Culture Show the whole day.
I was editing promos, Fram, and someone's got to do it.
But why couldn't you wait till you got home and enjoy your time with Leslie, Barnes?
I did enjoy my time with Leslie. Well, I would, Cubby, but Leslie was on conference calls the entire time we were there.
Yeah, Leslie, are you serious? Are you really
call
on
a spade?
Are you really on Zoom calls all day? Because you say that, and I am. I don't believe it.
Okay, here's an example.
There were some emergencies.
Oh, now wait, Leslie. No.
Reenact it.
Hold on. So they are like, let's go to lunch. We're going to go to Kentucky for lunch, and we're in Tennessee, mind you. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, how am I gonna get any of this work done? And then Lanny goes, Leslie, why don't you ride into Tesla so you can see what this whole auto drive thing is about? And Heather will come with me. I'm like, okay. So Fram gets in. Within 30 seconds, she's on a conference call. I'm sorry. I got to take this. I'm sorry. The whole way. So I couldn't even show her. I just put the car on auto drive and I like tuned out. And Leslie was like, so. What do you want to have for lunch?
He wanted to show me all the bells and whistles and
But I love it how most people are like just nose deep in their phone, but you're just always on calls, Leslie. Like you're not really on your like just you know some people stare at their phone and just you know swipe
right,
and do all that.
Right.
You're literally on calls all day.
I will say that Heather and I went into this really cool antique place because Heather knows all about antiques
for a freaking hour.
They stayed in the car. Lanny and Barnes stayed in the car. And we're like, well, you know what? Well, I'm not going to stress out about this. Like, we were in there for like hour and a half.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Lanny took a nap, and I was running my phone battery down. At one point, I looked over and said something to Lanny, and he was asleep.
Did the Tesla auto drive follow a mysterious car out of nowhere in honor of Fram?
It did not.
Like we talked about last week. I got to tell you, my wife heard that story. We were listening back to the podcast, and
so
she
true.
Was crying.
That's
well,
true
Fram,
story.
She paid attention for just a few seconds. Can you talk about auto drive, Fram? What do you remember?
I just remember watching your dash. It was very impressive.
She was taking pictures of it, and like she was, it was almost like it was the car was a celebrity. She was like taking pictures of the screen as it was driving us through Nashville.
I do have a quick Tesla question, by the way.
Yes, sir.
If you're, because I'm really thinking about getting one, because
use my code.
I know I will when I get to it. If I have the air conditioning blowing full blast, and I'm charging a phone, and my wife's charging her phone, does that make the battery go quicker?
Go down?
Yeah, go down quicker. Like, say I'm on a long road trip and I'm using a lot of, like, you know, other
minimal.
Things.
Minimal.
Minimal.
Okay. I turn the AC. If I go in to eat lunch somewhere, I immediately turn the AC on as soon as they get out and let it stay on.
Right.
It doesn't even go down a percent.
You have what's your model again?
The 3.
The 3.
The Model 3 Sport Package. You got to ride in it. You'll be convinced.
Plug bell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plug well, bill. Needless to say, Cubby, we had a great time.
The farm is incredible. She has it's 40 acres. I'm not convinced she's seen more than one of those acres where the
true.
Actual house is, because I'm just feeling like that, because we went driving around in this truck that is a standard, like the old school truck, like you'd seen like in an old movie or something. And Leslie sat in the back, might as well have been on a hay bale.
I sat in the back with Heather.
And I could have sworn I heard her say a few times, I haven't seen this part yet.
I did not say that.
I don't know. There was just, it was just funny because Lanny runs the show. Lanny is like a workhorse.
Yeah, he does. I mean, he runs the show.
Can you name all the animals, by the way? How many animals do you have?
Only three.
Three.
Four. You got Bo.
Yeah, well, I'm talking about outdoor.
Yeah.
Two donkeys and a horse. But I will say that Barnes did do some aerial shots for us.
I did. So have you gotten that bill yet? That invoice? Did that come in?
Exactly.
Is your drone business, are you going to be firing back up pretty soon, you think?
Oh, we've been going strong the whole time. It's all commercial real estate.
Okay, good. Good. For, I was wondering about that.
Thanks for asking. It's been nonstop because of no one will travel. I mean, no one wants to travel, so all these big developments now more than ever need stuff.
Right.
Did you lose power this week, Cubby?
No, you know, the only thing I did is I took our daughter. She's 7 months old. Me and the wife took her to the beach, and she felt the ocean for the first time. But I just want to real quick ask you guys. Yeah, that was a great moment. We videotaped the water. No, she loved it. She loved it. But my thought is how much I hate the beach. Because I think the beach, there's pool people and there's beach people. And I get it. The beach is beautiful. But isn't the beach a pain in the butt?
Yeah, I'm a pool person.
I'm pool people.
There's so much to, you have to lug so much crap.
Yes.
You have to set up. You have to find a spot. It was a windy day. There's sand blowing. You can't get your lunch. I mean, it's just, I don't know why people love the beach so much. I've discovered that I really don't like the beach.
It is all the things you say, but the people that love it, I think that they are people that don't care about getting dirty or getting, you know, sand in their food and.
I like walking on the beach, but laying out in the sun, no. Give me a float-up bar anytime.
Correct, correct. Yeah.
And what's weird is you mentioned your child. When my child, who's now 18, we took her to the beach for the first time, she screamed like in fear because of the water hitting her. And she's checking into college this Tuesday for marine biology.
That's incredible.
Look at that. That's great.
Right. Full turn. And so that'll be my Tuesday going down to check her in. We only get a 2-hour window. So she has two other roommates and they tell you you're 9 to 11, you're 11 to 1, you're 1 to 3.
By the way, how quickly did she turn 18? Because everyone tells me how fast.
18 years.
Well, yeah. Okay. I get that. But you know, everyone tells me how fast it goes. I'm only 7 months into this and it's flying by. And now I get why people say they're going to be 12 before you know it.
So fast.
Yeah. It's crazy, right?
You got to catch all the little things at 7 months. Seriously, the next 3 years, you're going to be in fantasy land.
Right. Yeah, it's nonstop.
Okay, so I've gotten blown up so far. We're 7 minutes in. Leslie's gotten blown up so far. And we have a listener question that might take care of the third. It said, hey, Barnes Leslie, Cubby, do you ever have any outtakes that you don't share with us?
God.
Uh-oh.
And I thought, well, you know what? Yeah. There was one last week.
The man
there was
who
one
tapes
last week.
Everything.
Well, so, wait a minute. Who are the crosshairs on?
That would be you.
Great. Okay.
Yeah. So last week, now, of course, a podcast is a taped show, and we tape the show. There's very little editing, but there is a mastering process that makes it so you can actually hear us. We're all three in different locations, New York, Nashville, Atlanta. And sometimes there are segments when I'm editing that I take it out for the purpose. I do it for you, the people, the listener. So you can, you know, not have to listen to stuff that you don't need to. However, I do save those things. And some people suggest that we maybe get a Patreon account where people can hear the unedited version of the show, which there's probably another good 10 to 15 minutes of content that maybe wasn't meant for the show, or it can be a little racy, or it can be a little, you know, whatever.
Not a bad idea.
So last week we had a segment talking about, I believe it was Cubby, you were playing clips of some sort from, what was it? Where were you playing clips from?
Was I doing,
It was the Netflix.
Yeah, the Netflix thing.
The Netflix thing.
Yeah.
So you heard how it played out, and you can go to the last episode. It was very, you know, hey, here's this is the Netflix sound, and here's what it was,
supposed to be.
Yeah, the whole ta-dum.
Yeah.
We were talking about the different sounds that Netflix was considering before the ta-dum took effect.
So here's how that segment played out, unedited, so you can just hear what it's really like.
One of these sounds, and I want you to see if you know which one it is. Is it A?
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
All right. Mm. Or is it B? Wait, hang on a second. Where is it?
Ladies.
Or is it B? or is it C? Shit. Or is it C?
Ladies and...
Where is the... Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. Fuck you guys. Or is it C?
That's it. We're back live. So... Well,
Can we play the Drop Labs outtake? That was a half hour outtake. Where your damn shoes wouldn't get working because you didn't know how to hook them up.
There's nothing funny about that, Cubby.
You did. I will say you did a great job cleaning me up because I listened back to that and I had things all out of order on my computer and it was crazy.
But listen, the Drop Labs was not my problem. It's her headphones.
No, I know. But I remember we were trying to get it to work properly.
Hey, don't take the attention off of you, Cubby. This is your moment.
He immediately, come on, Cubby. This is the star of this segment.
I bow down to you, Steve. Thank you for being the edit master.
Did you see how that escalated? So we now know with Cubby, you get about four times to frustrate him. And then it's full on F you guys. I mean, just
well, I wasn't really mad though. I was like saying, I jokingly. I know what you guys are thinking.
Was that endearing?
Man.
What?
Yeah,
was it was endearing?
Like,
F you?
Because I knew you guys were like, come on, man, you're holding us down. You know, I felt like a quarterback, and I messed up a play.
Wait a second. Is that why you spent 8 hours editing the show last week, Barnes?
No, that whenever it makes me laugh. When I'm editing it, I just thought, okay, you know what? Cubby's due to get a little roasting because. He throws out the roasts quite a bit.
Well, that was fun. That was fun. Well, hopefully this will be an edit-free podcast for you.
Well, let's dive into some celebrity sleeve on... Oh, there's an outro.
Yeah. I don't even hold on. I don't even have to edit this one.
Keep that in there. Celebrity sleeve.
Staying in. So see, ladies and gentlemen, you just witnessed right there. There you go. There's no edit.
Hello.
There's your first little snafu of the show that happened in real time.
You put pressure on us though, Barnes.
We're not even having a drink right now.
We should.
Maybe we know that two of us aren't. I can't see your hands, Fran. Just saying.
Celebrity sleeve.
Try that again.
Let's dive into some celebrity sleaze. Okay, I know that Netflix, we have a lot of stories about Netflix today, but have you guys been watching anything new on Netflix?
Absolutely.
What?
I went through the whole Outer Banks, which Heather and I both loved. I know it's geared kind of towards young adults, but we actually liked it.
Well, it's a reboot, right?
No, Outer Banks?
I'm joking. Last week, everything was a reboot.
I know. Well, there's more. It's really good.
I will start today because Charles Esten, who's the star, will be on our show next week.
He is the star. He's the main, really main adult, and he's good. He's really good. He's from Nashville, right? Like the show Nashville.
Yeah, he was Deacon in Nashville, beloved character, and I will say one of the nicest people you will ever meet.
Can't wait to talk to him. I have a lot of questions. You both should do yourself a favor and watch Outer Banks. I'm also watching Bloodline.
Yeah, I saw Bloodline. I'll give you some news when you finish.
I'm only three episodes
in. Okay, but I have some news for you when you finish. So a couple of heavy things I want to get out of the way in Celebrity Sleaze. Obviously, you saw the news. Lori Loughlin and her husband, fashion designer Massimo, I can't pronounce his last name, were sentenced to 2 and 5 months in jail for the college admissions scandal. What happened there? Because originally, wasn't he supposed to get 4 to 5 years?
I don't know. Why did he get more than she did?
I guess he paid more.
Yeah, I don't know the whole thing. But you know, it's a country club they're going to, guys.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
I mean,
seriously.
Becky's not going to be doing hard time.
Look, I would not want to be in there. Don't get me wrong. But... they're probably not going to be in there the full term, I'm guessing. And it's like a country club.
Their apology was very well scripted, too.
If she's smart, she would make that a reality show because that's the only work she's going to get.
Potentially. Now, the other news is, are you ever a little skeptical when you see a headline from a celebrity where it's like, I buried my truth for so long? You know that something's about to happen, right? Like they have a book coming out. Or,
correct.
In this case, it's Paris Hilton and her new documentary, This is Paris, which is going to be September 14th, premiering on her YouTube channel. I mean, if this is true, I feel really sorry for her, but the timing is a little skeptical. She was talking about, and this is the other part of the story where you kind of don't feel sorry for her. Remember when she was growing up, she lived at the Waldorf, right, with her parents?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she talked about sneaking out at night and how terrible it was because her parents took her phone away and her credit cards. And then they sent her off to this boarding school. And apparently she's saying the entire time she was at this boarding school, she was bullied and harassed and tortured. Now, that school doesn't exist anymore, and no one can verify this, although a couple of people that went there said the same thing, so we'll see. I don't know if you saw this story or you have any thoughts about it.
I saw the trailer, and I don't know what it is. She's done something to herself. She looks much prettier than she did in the height of all this craziness, where I think she was maybe having some work done. I don't know that, but she looks very natural and very depressed.
Though she says that she's all grown up now and she wants to tell her story.
I can't believe how long it's been, too. Was it 15?
It's been a
15
long
15 years ago when the nude pictures were coming out?
Yes.
Long time.
20 years ago?
This is really sad. The headlines about Larry King's two children dying within 3 weeks of each other. And he's like, you know, it's terrible when you're a parent and you have to outlive your children. But his son, Andy King, died of a heart attack. He was 65. And his daughter, Chaya King, 51, sadly died. She had lung cancer. Is that terrible? Like two of his children within a matter of 3 weeks.
Really sad.
So I do need some clarification here from the two of you. How do you pronounce this word? It's thruple, like couple, thruple. But thruple like a threesome, right?
You're talking about John Mayer, right?
Yeah, the John Mayer story.
Thruple. That's the first time I've seen that word in a while.
Well, apparently the star of Vanderpump Rules, Shianna Shea, claims that, this kind of went on for a really long time. Stacy, the bartender from The Hills, started going to John's house where a fling started, and it went on for about 6 months.
He had just discarded Jennifer Aniston, and he went that far
right
down?
Right after Jennifer Aniston. Hello?
That must have been when he covered the song Free Fallin', too, from Petty, because he took, like, what a lofty journey that is to go from Jennifer Aniston in your bed to the bartender of The Hills.
Right.
I mean,
that's a big drop, right?
Bro.
Yeah.
Dancing with the Stars apparently having a hard time booking some guests. A lot of people are saying ever since they, you know, let go of Tom Bergeron and Aaron Andrews and they brought on Tyra Banks because they thought Tyra's going to bring in like all these major celebrities. Guess what? It hasn't happened yet.
Why would they think that? Since when is she the major celebrity getter?
I guess, you know, because she's high fashion. She would bring on all these major, you know, models, and I have no idea. But so far, it's still sort of C&D level folks.
Well, that's what that show's made of.
It's been trending. No, but actually, I'll admit, early on, they had some pretty big names. I feel like it's been trending downward for the last 5-6 years.
I think that makes the show better.
What, if you haven't heard of them?
No, you've heard of them, but they're in random... You know, think of all the, like, you know, if you had... I'm just throwing it, like, Beaver from Leave It to Beaver.
No, I get that. You haven't seen him in a while. Right. I do like those, right. They had Mrs. Brady on before she passed away, Florence Henderson.
Right.
That was fun.
I mean, I've had a couple of friends that have been on that show, and honestly, they said they had a blast doing it, but a lot of times I have no idea who the people are, and I have to, like, Google who they are.
Correct.
Will Smith, Kevin Hart are going to remake Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I don't like it. Don't mess with the original, man.
Come on, John Candy. Yeah. That's tough. And Steve Martin? I don't know. By the way, Simon Cowell is back home, you know, after he cracked his back. But did you see the photos of Dax Shepard? He had this big motorcycle accident. He was showing all his bruises on Instagram. It was severe. I don't know about this. Tiger King season 2 is in the works?
What else
can they do?
Because
Joe Exotic is in jail, but he's the star of it.
I know, but it's brilliant because you might as well just, you know, keep feeding off what's already successful. Try to figure something out.
Well, there's been a story for the last 6 months. It's been happening, and the story was season 1. So all this mayhem happening.
Right.
And now they closed the zoo down.
Yeah, I think PETA got to the zoo because Jeff Lowe announced that Tiger King Zoo is closed immediately.
You know, when I hear about the Tiger King, I think about the pandemic only because that was the first thing people started talking about when the pandemic started. Does that sound familiar?
Like they can thank the pandemic.
Yeah. I remember it was like March and people were talking about, hey, if you're going to be stuck at home, watch Tiger King. And that always reminds me of the beginning of this whole thing.
Finally, who knew that Ryan Reynolds had a gin company? But apparently Aviation Gin is being bought by this British multinational beverage alcohol company, Diageo. He might walk away with $265 million.
He was apologizing for that. You know he has a gin company. Remember, Fram, like recently, he had that girl that got all the heat from the Peloton ad do his ad.
Right.
That's right.
That was about a year ago.
Ish.
These celebrities with their liquors, I mean, it's pretty insane. So they're saying it like it's a $600 million deal, and his portion could be like $275.
That's
a good. That's a good payday for Ryan Reynolds.
It really is.
That's your celebrity sleaze.
So, guys, I was doing some research because a friend of mine is a big fan of Limp Bizkit, and we were going back and forth about Limp Bizkit just being like, I say Limp Bizkit's okay, and they were, oh, no, they were huge, he was huge, blah, 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 blah.
And for a minute.
For a minute, right. And I did some research on bands that have had huge success, but for the most part, people hate them. And I want you to know if you agree with any of these. So Limp Bizkit, ironically, was number 10. On the list, followed by Fish at number 9. But I don't get the Fish thing.
I don't either. That was just like a mellow jam band.
I mean, I could see where either you like or you don't like Fish, but they don't seem like a hated band, right. like probably some of the ones coming on your list.
Like Fred Durst. Right.
Exactly. Train came in at number 8. Again,
why Train?
These are bands that have had huge success, but a majority of people really think they're douchebags. So Train is number 8.
I didn't get that one. Yeah.
Creed is number 7.
Oh, that's a slam dunk.
Wait a minute. They're not number 1?
Well, we're getting there.
I can already guess where this is going.
What, 7?
I
think Creed should be in the top 5.
Well, the funny thing is, I think everybody I'm mentioning here, we've interviewed and we might have a relationship with. A Dave Matthews Band came in number 6.
How? Why do people hate? Is there any context in these articles and these lists about why they're hated?
You know, it all comes down to either their look. Like for example, Goo Goo Dolls is number 5, and people think they're like perfectly manicured men, and their songs are sappy.
I don't get it about Dave Matthews Band.
Number 4, now I love this guy, super good dude, Mark McGrath and his band Sugar Ray.
I can see why they hate him. He's such a nice guy, and it's easy to hate people who are succeeding. I mean, he's had a decent career in a few things.
Yeah, right now he's a jock on Sirius XM, I believe. He does a show there. But number 3, I could care less about, and Insane Clown Posse.
How'd that get on the list? Random one.
Because, I agree, because the list is that they are very successful. Now, I know they had an okay, you know,
run. Yeah, they had a cult following, too.
Finally, we're down to number 2. Uh-oh. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go
Smash
play. Again,
guilty pleasure.
They've had a ton of hits.
I know.
But the list is people that were huge, but we don't like them anyway. Can we say number 1 together? Because
yes.
We're all thinking.
You want to do 1, 2, 3 and then say it?
You say it and ready? I'll play it. Ready?
1, 2, 3.
Nickelback.
And here's exhibit 3,475. They just tortured this song. Listen to this. They redid The Devil Went Down to Georgia. Listen how awful this is. What the hell is that?
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for souls.
You wonder.
They did have huge hits. When it came across, this was their first hit right here. And this is how
you remind me. That was massive.
I don't mind that song.
This is how you but all their songs did end up sounding the same for the most part after that.
Good list.
Yeah.
I have some music for you. Here's a couple of new things this week to be on the lookout for that are going to be, one of them is going to be taking over TikTok. Everyone's going to be start using it to make TikToks. How smart to make a song called TikTok? Catchy.
It is.
Clean Bandit and Mabel with 24 Golden.
I like Clean Bandit.
Another new one out. I love this band. I love everything they put out. They are from Las Vegas. The album is called Imploding the Mirage, which I thought was interesting because immediately I was thinking about all the casinos that they've imploded in Vegas, their hometown, but I don't think the Mirage was one of them. But the Killers have a brand new album out. From the cover. Love his voice.
Yeah, he's good.
Totally. And then here's one. We can't Baja Banks has a new one with Chance the Rapper. And we can't not, you know, play Shake That Ass. Go on, shake that ass, girl. Shake that ass. I mean, what? He stays. Shake that ass. Check out Chance the Rapper. He's rapping about my car. Listen. Bentley through the low end. Tesla through the hundreds. Yeah, so there's your new music bank.
Well, guys, you always give me a hard time for not bringing in big time guests, so I had to pull out the big guns. And so Barnes, Leslie, let me introduce you to my buddy, my pal, the nicest guy in the world and a very smart man, Dr. Oz.
Well,
hey,
God bless you,
Doc.
Cubby. How are
I'm
you
a huge
all?
Fan.
We're so excited.
I'm so impressed that Cubby looks well-rested with a baby in the house. I don't know. How does that work, even? I could never pull that off.
I don't know. It's amazing. It's life-changing. I think the adrenaline, actually, every day keeps you going. And
hold on. Dr. Oz, the important thing is this is pre his Jaeger shots he does at 5 o'clock. Is that healthy? Let's ask the man.
I do a Jaeger shot every day at 5 p.m. Actually, sometimes more than one.
True story, Dr. Oz.
Well, I'll tell you, when my kids were young, I would sign up for extra on-call at the hospital because at least I could get a little sleep there.
Right. I know. Yeah, I don't sleep much, but it's all worth it. And again, thank you for joining us. And these are my podcast pals, Barnes and Leslie. And we just have, a few questions for you. And I want to catch up. And you've been a busy man, I'm sure. I mean, everyone wants to talk to you about COVID-19, correct?
Well, it's been the busiest 6 months of my life. It's also been frustrating at times and exhilarating at others, because one of the problems you run into oftentimes in life is that you have inadequate information. So as a doctor, you know, you often got to go talk to a patient when you don't know 100% what the right decision is because there's no data on it. And that's how this entire 6 months has often felt. We have some directionally correct ideas, but we end up changing our minds on a lot of other issues like masks. And I know that's been very frustrating for the public. But net, you're right. I'm getting called a lot just to try to offer advice that I give to my own family, because at this point, that's the most valuable advice.
Dr. Oz, how do you even have time in the day? And this is an honest question from being, you know, a publisher of books, a man of television, an actual doctor, an actual surgeon. How do you find time to actually practice surgery and medicine?
Well, I've always dedicated one day a week that I go to the hospital, participate in, you know, in our grand rounds, do procedures, see patients. In fact, right now I'm studying for my boards, because every 5 years you have to get re-upped to make sure you're staying up to date and the health information. But I also have great partners at the hospital. And I'm at Columbia University, New York Presbyterian Hospital here in the city. So it's easy for me to go to the studio a couple days a week, and then just instead of turning right to go downtown, I go turn left to go uptown to the hospital. And the routine has always maintained me. And I got to say, when I was talking to Oprah about where to tape the show, one of the reasons we wanted to be in New York was that I could keep practicing, because I felt that ideally we'd be putting in television what I do every day, taking care of patients. And if I could just take that same in honesty and just translate it to your home, then you'd actually be able to learn a lot about what your doctor wants to tell you but doesn't have time to tell you. So it makes you a smarter patient. In fact, it makes you a world expert on your own body, which you really should be.
Dr. Oz, there have been so many questions about testing for COVID-19, and a lot of the people that are listening now, I am really curious about the false negatives that are happening. You broke it down. I follow you on Instagram and Twitter. You broke it down. How is that happening? And if you do get a negative test but still have the symptoms, should you go back and be retested? It's so confusing.
Well, let me simplify it a little bit by answering the second part of that question with affirmative. Yes, you have to go get tested again if you have symptoms. If you're coughing and having a fever or feeling lethargy or having intestinal problems and you have a negative test, you still have to suspect COVID-19, go get tested again. And here's why. Until recently, a lot of the tests required you to put the little probe, the Q-tip, at the very back of your nose. That
yes.
Cotton swab is uncomfortable. I don't know if you guys have been tested, but
yes.
I mean, I get tested at the hospital, your eyes water, right? It's not very pleasant. So to take it easy on you, instead of leaving that cotton swab back there for 10 seconds, which is the official protocol, they just sort of get near it. Well, that's not the same thing. If I'm swabbing the outside of your nose versus deep inside your nose where it feels like it's in your brain, you may not pick up the virus, which is primarily at the back of your throat. That's why this recent information, which I want to thank the NBA and their commissioner Adam Silver for, because they participated in examining this, and the CDC has just approved a saliva test. The reason that's important is you don't just spit a little bit of stuff. You actually collect sputum from the back of your throat, deep in your lungs, and go like that, right? Spit it into this test, into this cup. And that's actually a very accurate way of getting it. It's not perfect, but getting a sample of sputum that's pretty stable, can be tested the next day or day after. And so you'll learn very quickly if you're positive or negative. And because you know that it's not uncomfortable, you don't mind doing it a lot.
Amen.
And most people now agree the better way of screening America is to do lots of tests and assume the first one may not be perfect, but if you do two tests, one of them is going to be right.
What is your biggest concern, Dr. Oz, fall going into winter? What is your biggest concern with this? And are we in the first wave still or the second wave? I mean, no one really knows.
Is it halftime?
Right.
It's about halftime, actually. But we're still in the first wave. You're still in the first half. And we saw what happened in New York spread to the South. Actually, many times it was New Yorkers literally going to the South and carrying the virus with them, even out to Arizona. And that allowed the virus to continue to prosper when it shouldn't have. My biggest concern, to answer your first question, is nihilism. Is this belief we're never going to get ahead of this? It's going to keep haunting us. It's going to be torturing us. And there's so many positive bits of information that it makes me feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to whip this in a timely fashion. Here they are. Ready? First off, recent data from Europe, about a third of us may have what are called killer T cells. So our immune system is made up of antibodies. You all know about those, right? They're little foot soldiers ready to attack the virus. But you also have these memory cells, these T cells in your body. So if you had the common cold last year or the year before, your body may have recalled that a coronavirus causes a common cold oftentimes, and it's close enough to the current COVID-19 virus that you're actually protected. That means, think about this, a third of the population may not be prone to getting a bad infection or infected at all. Then you have in places like New York City, where I am, you've got a 20% incidence maybe of people who have already been infected. That gets you above 50% of the population. Now you're approaching herd immunity numbers. So it means a second wave won't be as bad as we would otherwise have feared. Second big information, 70% of Americans are wearing a mask. You know, a mask is although early on we didn't appreciate how powerful it was, we now recognize, and I've spoken to the COVID task force, the White House task force on this, all these experts are saying the same thing. The mask tames this virus. It makes it behave like the flu instead of COVID-19. And that's why we're seeing a dramatic reduction in cases in the South now and across the country. So all of these are positives. We have weapons we can use, like the mask. We've got general biology supporting us. And then there's a few other factors. Our medical management is dramatically improved. Only half the number of people go to the ICU as used to in the early days of COVID-19. And then finally, the vaccine. Right, which all the early data is supporting its efficacy. So we think it's going to work. We'll have a lot of data probably by November, December, giving people confidence that we can actually mass vaccinate people. If they want to get vaccinated, no one's going to force you. But if you want to get vaccinated and be part of the herd immunity to protect America, you can get your vaccine. We're going to have to wait till January, February probably to do that, because you want to give enough months of, you know, tens of thousands of people experiencing the vaccine to make sure it's safe, so that the average American, the average person listening to your show right now, can say, you know what, I get it. It works and it seems to be safe enough. Nothing's perfect, but it's safe enough. I'm going to go ahead and get it.
What do you think, Dr. Oz, though? The conversation centering around this vaccine that at some point will be here, you're going to find companies and places, just like they're requiring masks, don't you think, where they're going to say, look, if you're going to come back to work, you have to have the vaccine. But then that opens up the conversation politically, it opens up the safety conversation, all of this starts going sideways. How do you think everyone's going to react to that and work through it?
I think forcing people to get a vaccine would be a horrible error.
Do you think people are going to?
There may be some, but as to your point you made, energetically, it changes the entire equation. The argument needs to be, here's the five reasons that you don't want to get the vaccine. And here are the five reasons that those arguments are wrong. Just deal with it head on. You know, face to face, because you talk through it, and some people will never change their mind. But most people I have found will, as long as you actually confront the arguments that are being made without, you know, behind the scenes, often on social media, that scares people and convinces people it's unwise. And by the way, we got to get the data. I'm not just going to pretend that I know it's safe. We don't know that yet. So let's see what the data shows over, you know, different age groups, different genders, different races. African Americans are very resistant to vaccines and these therapies because there's a history of African Americans being used in experiments that they weren't consented to. So there's a, you know, hesitation. So let's just deal with those issues, get it out there, and then people who want to get vaccinated, if they can. But let me go through the numbers here. You need about 60 to 70% of people protected one way or the other in order to have herd immunity. So you don't have to have 100% of people get vaccinated. It would be nice if the vaccine's safe and effective for that to happen, but you know, the 100% is a hard number. But if most people get vaccinated, or they've been exposed and recovered, or they have, you know, past years exposure to the common cold and are protected from that, then we'll cobble together a coalition of people who won't get the virus. And that's how we'll create barriers. I would emphasize for people who are vulnerable, older people with chronic conditions like obesity, diabetes, hypertension, people in nursing homes, they really ought to get the vaccine. If it works for them, we have to prove it. It could be a game changer, because if those people aren't getting sick, and remember, 95% of the people into the hospital were those category people, then the rest of us don't have that big a deal with the virus. Young people don't seem to have a big problem. So I'm not going to bang my head into the wall vaccinating every 5-year-old in America.
What about with flu season coming up? Because, you know, there are some people who never take a flu shot, but now coupled with COVID-19, what's your recommendation on that? Because it's worrying a lot of people.
Well, the flu shot's been around for a long time. I've gotten, you know, 20 years worth of flu shots. So I don't think the danger is a massive issue there. Some people are still going to be hesitant. I get that. But for the average American, that's low-lying fruit. I think getting the flu vaccine means that if you get a fever and lethargy in the middle of December, you won't be fearful it's actually COVID-19. You won't be going through all the extra testing. You won't be worried about side effects or lying on your back for 2 or 3 weeks. So I think this might be the good year to get your flu vaccine. And a lot of facilities are going to start offering it early so that you can get, you know, first in line and get protected.
See, my fear is going back to later this year is a bad collision between COVID-19 spiking and a bad flu season, because that could ultimately fill hospitals up. Is that a concern?
Very much of a concern. And, you know, for the flu is not a benign process. We probably have, you know, 30, 40,000 people a year die. Last year, the more children died of the flu than died of COVID-19. So it's not a benign process. So if, you know, you march in the war with the army you've got. We have a vaccine for the flu. Take it. Remove that as one of the problems that might land you on your back for a week. Again, I do it anyway because I'm in the hospital. I don't want to give patients who are already sick the flu. But think about that for your own families. If you can protect yourself. So, you know, you guys are all good. You know, once this sort of eases up a little bit more, you guys are exposed to a lot of people, right? You're in media. So why take a chance? I mean, you can continue to enjoy your job, keep entertain your fan base, and keep your family safe all at the same time by getting by helping that process by getting a flu shot. I would take it.
What's weird now, and my wife is guilty of this, every time anything hurts, I've got coronavirus. I need to go get, you know what I mean? There are other things that
happened to me last week. It was like 3 days in a row. I was more tired than usual all day long. And I thought, oh my God,
it's
I got the
in your
bid.
Head.
Yeah.
Everyone
yeah.
thinks, oh, I've got coronavirus.
right.
I mean, it just keeps happening. You can get sick from other things. I mean, come on.
Oh, it messes with your head. I think this is a bigger theme in America. A lot of people are scared and you don't want to go through life in fear. It's not a good way to make decisions. This is not just about COVID-19, no. In life in general. You don't want to make decisions with a pure emotional driver of fear, because we're better than that and we're strong enough to do it differently. And yeah, your fatigue for 3 days could be COVID-19, but it's probably not.
Right. What's the biggest question you get besides COVID-19, obviously, from when you're packed, because you're such a people person, when people engage with you, what do they ask you?
Actually, can I chime in on that, Barnes?
Yeah.
Because before COVID-19, I would ask Oz about hemorrhoids and stuff. Like, I got a hemorrhoid. What do I do? Like, things have totally changed in the last 6 months.
Well, the number one question I still get is, what is Cubby really like?
Shut up.
I ask hemorrhoids. That often.
It's hemorrhoids and Jägermeister. It's,
right. Exactly.
It's easy.
It's all right here.
That is a good question, Barnes. What question do you get the most, probably, outside of COVID?
What can I do to live my best life? To be able to thrive in a world where I don't seem to have any control. And I always tell people, listen, part of the reason I went into health is because the only person who can control your health is you. And interestingly, it applies to COVID-19, but everything else as well. One of the best ways to avoid complications of COVID-19 is to lose weight, which, Cubby, you've done beautifully. And there's lots of people who don't appreciate how much resilience they truly have. And they also don't appreciate the importance of us to each other. Because what's been the safety net for humanity is each other, is us. And we're designed to be intimate social creatures. Our brain got the size they are, not to go hunting. You can go hunting with a walnut-sized brain. We have a large prefrontal cortex, so we can look at each other and assess visual cues, but even equally importantly, auditory cues are hugely important. The subtle timbre of your voice, how you said things rather than what you said. That's why music's so important to us, and what you do is so critical, because people are hearing you and processing all kinds of subtle elements that you may not even know you're conveying, but it's truthfully there. And so I tell people, remember, you're like a raindrop falling into the ocean of humanity. Never forget that you have huge power if we do it in numbers.
I love the health tips that you give. And one thing I did want to ask you, because Barnes and Covey gave me a hard time about this a couple of weeks ago. I bought this thing on Amazon. It's a WeFit, and it's this gallon water jug. And it has little, you know, inspirational sayings every 2 hours starting at 7 a.m. to force me to drink water, because I would never drink water during the day. Now I'm drinking a gallon a day. What is your recommendation on drinking water? And is that too much, a gallon a day that I'm drinking?
But my daughter has what you have. And I was giving her a hard time about it because I said, the amount of water you drink really does depend on how much you sweat and how much you exercise. And so the general rule of thumb is you should be able to read through your urine. So you should be hydrated well enough that when you pee, it's relatively clear. And if you have to, don't actually do this, by the way, Cubby. So literal.
But, I was trying to pick out a book. I had like Judy Blume, Super Fudge, ready to go.
Yeah, exactly. Or Mad Magazine. You recommend reading through Mad Magazine through your urine, right? Yes. Without getting it wet. You know, that's the kind of, but that's actually the best test. Now, there's no harm with doing a gallon a day, but you don't have to have a gallon a day. And it might be that 3/4 of a gallon a day is fine for you. So if you look down and your urine is dark colored, like Coca-Cola colored or darker than that golden yellow, then you're not hydrated well enough.
I have that same jug, but I fill it with Diet Coke. Is a gallon of Diet Coke too much so a day, Dr. Oz?
You know, I have strong feelings about diet sodas. There's no free lunch. And I got, here's the problem with diet sodas. The artificial sweeteners in there are several hundred times sweeter than sugar. They've never been shown to help you diet. Quite the opposite. They are linked to chronic metabolic illnesses, not probably because of the drink itself, but because people who are drinking it are prone to those problems. But your brain is so smart that is looking for nutrients.
He's so drinking a Diet Coke as you're talking.
I
can see it. I mean, I know you're describing it for the listener, but it's embarrassing. Gotta get a screenshot of that. So
okay, well, is iced tea the same?
No, real drinks with real sugar, I feel, are better than diet drinks. So if you had if you have iced tea with it, but think about this: how much sugar do you need to put in a drink? If normally these soft drinks have a teaspoon per cc per ounce, you know, it's a lot of sugar. And if you just put one full teaspoon of sugar into a tea, it'll taste sweet enough, and that's 16 calories. And so it's not 130 or 160 calories. It's 13 calories or 15 calories. It's not much. So,
I need to stop.
Yeah, yes, I think Barnes, that's an easier way to go.
I had an issue like Barnes. I had Diet Coke all the time, 4 or 5 a day. I switched to seltzer, and yeah. I still get that fizz feeling and a little bit of flavor. But, you know, it's healthy. It's 0, 0, 0 all across the board here.
I need to stop.
And they have these flavored fizzy drinks now, which I like too. I think you're right, Cubby. That's the way to do it. You tickle your tongue, which is what a lot of the soft drink beverage experience is about. You don't need all those artificial tastes in there. And then, you know, if you want sugar, add sugar.
Yeah, I can say I got confronted by Dr. Oz. I've got to put down, why'd you stop drinking Dr. Coke? Diet Coke, because Dr. Oz said so. Dr. Oz, when all this hysteria and, I mean, your career started when, you know, Oprah, you know, put you to the forefront. Did you ever think, I mean, were you targeting that or did you just kind of end up in it? Was like when you started your media career and in your enterprise and then you met Oprah, I don't know how you met Oprah, but then she really started cheerleading you. You were a guest, what, 500 times or something on her show. I mean, did you think it would ever be this type of thing?
Not only did I not think it was possible, it wasn't on my vision board. And I hazard to say that if I had desired a career in media, it would not have worked with Oprah. And I'll tell you very briefly how this all came down. It was my wife's fault, by the way. Like many relationships, I would just, you know, put my, you know, shoulder to the millstone. We're working in the salt mine of New York Presbyterian Columbia, going to work every morning, operating all day and coming home exhausted. And my wife was, after a while, sick and tired of my whining about the fact that so many of my patients could have avoided the need for me to heal them with steel, literally taking a bandsaw to their chest to open them up to do heart surgery, if only they had understood a few basic tips about general health, losing weight, dealing with their diabetes, managing their blood pressure, all these things we talk about in the show all the time. And so in the course of that, she said, why don't we make a show together? Because my wife is, remember those Visine commercials with the bloodshot eyes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are my wife's eyes. So she understood the power of media. She understood the remarkable ability of you guys to change people's minds. So she said, let's go make the show. So I made a show for Discovery Channel. So it was a series, actually, of 13 episodes called Second Opinion. And my wife produced them. And my first guest, Oprah Winfrey.
Incredible.
And she came on because Gayle King was just a wonderful human being, said, Oprah, what this guy's trying to do is important. Give him a time of day. You're going to be in New York on whatever day it was. Just let him have half an hour, 20 minutes even. And so she was already in hair and makeup to get her own magazine cover taken. And we ended up talking for hours. And we really hit it off. And she's a great teacher, a great educator, not just for America, but for me. We call Oprah University. And those of us who are privileged to have worked on her show with her, she just shared stuff with you. Like, for example, as a doctor, I figured if I give you the facts, you're going to change. Obviously, right? If I'm telling you to stop smoking, you're going to have a heart attack, you'll stop smoking. Wrong. That doesn't work in personal life, doesn't work in medicine or anywhere else. Oprah said, and she's right, people do not change based on what they know. They change based on how they feel. Get people to feel differently about stopping cigarettes or whatever the problem is, wearing a mask for COVID. They feel differently about it, then they'll do it. And so that was the beginning of my years working with her. And then she launched me on my career because Lisa and her conspired and said, listen, you have the ability to make a show. I'll support you. But you got to go out there and tell everyone as honestly as you can stuff that they're not hearing from the healthcare system now. America's not taking care of themselves because we haven't given them the advice in a way that empowers them. And that was the birth of the show. And I think, although, you know, when we looking back on it years later, you guys know, but I got a Hollywood star this month. That happens, and it's like a dream. I'm pinching myself because it was never, no heart surgeon wants to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Where is it located?
It's in Hollywood. I don't know where it is yet. We haven't, COVID-19, I can't celebrate. I
can't even see a star.
I wanted to know the exact street.
But nobody wants to do that. You're coming.
Dr. Oz, I didn't realize this until this morning that you are on TikTok. How's Dr. Oz is on TikTok? When did that start?
Well, you know, my show was in China, and my show's in 100 countries. And in China, the parent company of TikTok is called Douyin, and I've got hundreds of thousands of followers on that portal. And so the crossover to TikTok was pretty straightforward. TikTok is wonderful if you want to get the message out without a lot of ads to a younger generation. And they actually care a lot about health. You know, people care about health four times in their life. When they go through puberty, that's why the TikTok generation cares about it. When they go through menopause, that's why the show works, because every woman from 35 to 60 thinks she's in menopause, and many times they are. When you're going through a health crisis, and when you're pregnant, those are the four times you care. And so pretty much throughout your life, there are opportunities for people to come into the health arena and then go back out again. You know, 25-year-old men don't care about health, unless it's related to sports. So you've got to find your way to talk to them about health. But there's a huge audience that are experiencing health issues in their lives. It's not bad critical illnesses, things like, you know, puberty is not an illness, but crazy things are happening to your body. You want to understand them. So if I make a TikTok on how to take care of a pimple, and by the way, don't pop them. There's a whole strategy for doing this. Then you'll watch.
Now, listen, Dr. Oz, I want to ask you a quick question. You made me feel a lot better. My daughter was born on January 27th, and you're one of the first people to text me. And I said, everything's great. My daughter is healthy, but she was born with a cleft palate. Mm-hmm. And you wrote back, easy fix. And that made me feel a lot better. And the surgery's planned in a couple of months. And for those that don't know, a cleft palate, you can't see it visually unless you look inside the mouth on the roof of her mouth. Like, you can see her nasal passages if you look in the roof of her mouth. But it's not a cleft lip or anything. It's in the inside. So my question is, I've read about it. I still don't understand how they repair a cleft palate. Is it skin graft? Do you even know that answer? I know you know everything.
Yeah, it depends how wide it is. And there's sometimes you do use skin grafts, but oftentimes you can mobilize the tissue well enough just to close it. Remember, the only reason that you have to fix a cleft palate is so to help with phonation, to be able to pronounce the letters of the alphabet more effectively, so she'll speak without an impairment. People have cleft lips, which is a more severe version of this condition. There's a significant cosmetic element that you need to fix as well. And that's a bit more dicey, but what your daughter's going to go through is not nearly as challenging. And I also want to emphasize that, you know, you don't do it too early, because you don't want to do anything to a young baby. You just want to do it before they start making words, so that she'll never know the difference.
Yeah, the problem is she can't, like, the bottle, she can't suck.
Right.
Because she doesn't have that suction ability with no roof of her mouth. So we have to help her with bottles and stuff like that. But it's comforting to know that it's an easy fix, because it's scary. You know, it really is.
That is scary.
Every child is born with little things you don't know about, and you discover them, and it's, everyone gets worried about it, because, you know, moms feel like the child is the fifth limb, right? They're especially, nothing happens to that child without you viscerally feeling it. Thankfully, I think oftentimes the most dangerous thing for the child is the anxiety of the parent, not the actual problem the child's facing. That's the one Agreed. Thing we've really dealt well with in medicine, is being able to manage these kinds of common problems.
Dr. Oz, I'm a huge fan of yours, as I mentioned at the beginning. And with fame comes tough territory sometimes. And what is it? I mean, I know that you are a big entity now, but when you get these other doctors and other people trashing you just because you've had fame as a doctor beyond just the operating room and on television and books, is that tough to deal with? I mean, these guys, everyone's got to tear everyone down who has success. I think you give great information. I'm not a doctor. I don't know, you know, that you're what you're saying is completely accurate because I don't know. I trust you and you're a trusting guy.
It comes with the territory. And I divide people into two categories. There are folks that are attacking you because they're embittered about something that has nothing to do with me. And like, I hear it. Of course it hurts, but I don't take that to heart. And then there are people who say things sometimes quite harsh where they got a point. And you got to differentiate those two. Right? To blindly think that I got everything figured out and everyone's criticizing me is jealous is a big error. Respecting the opinions and differentiating the opinions that are said for positive benefit to me is an important point. And we spent a lot of time in the show doing just that, identifying which are the messages that are being sent to us that we got to really respond to. Because this person's making a great argument about why I shouldn't be saying X, Y, Z. And those are the ones I listen to. Listen, if you're in the public eye, you better be responsive to the public. If you're ignoring what people are observing about you, and sometimes it's not even that I'm saying the wrong thing, is I'm saying it in the wrong way. And if I'm misspeaking about something, I need to address that because people are getting the wrong impression of what the truth is. And it's still my fault for not making it clear enough.
It just seems like other doctors just dissect and look for one little thing that you say that they can grandstand on, just in the end, trying to get their own publicity.
Yeah.
It's just a weird thing.
You know what? I tell you, if they weren't paid attention, that would be worse. I'd much rather argue about whether the vaccine is safe or not than never have the discussion. And in America, what liberal democratic society is built on is our ability to tell the truth to each other and to not always get along, but still be okay about that. That's what the American tribe is about. We built this nation on our ability to speak sometimes with harshness towards each other. Listen, in the hospital, every Thursday at my hospital, we have what's called M&M conference. I do it after every show as well. It's morbidity and mortality conference, M&M. And we're supposed to go in there and explain why our patient died. Now, if it's not my fault, does the patient's family care? Not really. Does the next patient's family care? Not really. They want to know, what are you going to do differently so it doesn't happen again? And the questions that are asked are not kind, soft, cuddly questions. But they're not asking the questions to hurt me. They're asking the questions to debate what was the right thing to do, because you won't figure out how to improve what you're doing otherwise. This is the most sensitive thing about making my show. It's when I go back up to the control room afterwards and have everyone around me and we're saying, okay, what could we have done better? And sometimes I should be more complimentary because I've got a team I'm so proud of that really protects me and does a great job making entertaining television that's educational. But there's almost always something we could have done better. And sometimes it's me. I didn't ask the question the right way. You didn't write the question the right way. We didn't get the camera angle. The demonstration didn't explode with enough exuberance, whatever it could be. And we talk about that. And usually there's something we could have done better. So we remember it. Next time around, we improve.
Dr. Oz, you do have a lot going on. But at the end of the day, what do you do to unwind? I mean, are you binging on a Netflix show? Like, what does Dr. Oz do to really unwind and take a deep breath at the end of the day?
Well, it actually starts at the beginning of the day. My morning is very regimented. So I get up and I work out, and I actually relax when I work out because I watch something that I like to, like I'm watching The Last Kingdom right now, is an example. But I look forward to getting up and working out in the morning. Then about an hour after I've started working out, whatever, I have a whole different bunch of things I do, but I finish working out and I just feel like my whole day is wide open in front of me. And I also know, and I see bright light in the morning, I'm really dependent on light. I know that about 16 hours later, I'm going to get really tired, which is a good thing because it's nighttime, time to go to bed. And I work aggressively at sleep to make sure that I don't ever sacrifice it. But the most relaxing thing that I do is to have a meal with the family. And the kids know they can't play on technology, especially during COVID-19. They're my tech support. They run the prompter and hair and makeup. And my wife picks up my wardrobe. I mean, everyone has a job. And so they all have been chipping in. But to be able to speak to them about stuff that matters and witness how they process it and develop their own iterations of it, that's been the biggest blessing of all. I think most parents would probably agree that that's a positive part of this experience.
One last medical question, and I speak for millions of Americans. You've already solved Cubby's herpes or whatever it is he had. Oh, what was it?
I had a hemorrhoid. Yeah, I was wiping my butt and I saw blood.
Oh,
and I got
way
nervous.
Too much.
God!
No, it's too much.
True. And he said it's just a hemorrhoid. It ended up being just a hemorrhoid.
Okay. And he sent pictures. He sent me photos.
Stop. Okay, my question is, and I've tried everything for 9 months, plantar fasciitis. I've done AmnioFix. I've done the ice, the rolling on the ice bottle, everything. Can't fix it. What do I do?
So I'll give you a low tech and a high tech solution. The on the low tech side, I think a lot of people don't realize that by the time you've stepped on your foot the first time, you've already torn the plantar fascia. So you have to have a very aggressive stretch in your bed before you pressurize, because otherwise you pull the tendon off that little bone in the back of the foot where the tear actually is. If that doesn't work, and it, you know, that takes weeks for this to be effective, but if that doesn't work, then I strongly encourage you to try PRP. It has been beneficial for some. Sometimes it doesn't work the first time, but...
Is that the blood shake?
Yes.
And they re-inject it? That's what my guy was just saying we should do.
Yeah, that's what you should do.
Barnes, your blood. Own personal advice from Dr. Oz. That's impressive.
I know, well...
That'll be $500.
Exactly. Do you think AmnioFix is a good thing? A lot of people have asked me about that since I did it.
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. And a lot of these therapies have not been well enough tested for anyone to opine on them. But it's such a miserable problem as you're experiencing that it's worth trying different things. And unfortunately, I doubt one solution will work for everybody. But if you try enough solutions, one will work for you.
All right. Dr. Oz, it's been a pleasure. I know you don't do podcasts normally, and your connection with Cubby made it happen. And thank you very much. It was fantastic to have you.
Yeah, thank you for doing this.
The reason I don't do podcasts is I have so many friends who have great ones. I just don't have enough time in the day. So I broke the rule for Cubby. Now I'm probably going to get an avalanche by hate mail from my other friends.
No, I really, really appreciate it. It means so much. And I want to thank your team and you. This helps a lot.
This was incredible.
It's amazing, and I love you, brother.
Thank you so much.
You're a quality guy, a great team. Congratulations on all your success. Take care.
Thanks, Doc.
Thank you.
This is Cubby's Pop Culture Throwback, a rewind into the vault of music, movies, and moments.
All right, guys, where were you around this time in 2005, the week of August 24th, 2005? Do you remember?
Yeah, Atlanta.
ATL.
ATL, and you were listening to these songs. Number one song on the pop chart this week in 2005 was Mariah Carey and We Belong Together. Come back, baby, please, 'cause we belong together. Who else am I gonna lean on? I believe it was number one for like 15 weeks. It was crazy. Leslie, are you a Toby Keith fan?
Yes, I like Toby.
Number one song in the country this week in 2005 was As Good As I Once Was.
I said, girls, I ain't as good as I once was. I got a few years on me now.
By the way, his net worth is like over $500 million.
What?
He has a lot of investments. Smart guy.
Is he still active?
Yeah, he lives in Oklahoma.
Wow. All right. The number one song on the modern rock charts this week in 2005. And I want to talk about the what we call in the business the hook of the song. Because I remember when I was working at Z100, we would put this song in research and we never knew what the hook was because there were several different parts of the song that people liked. It was Feel Good Inc. by the Gorillaz. Windmill, windmill for the land. Now, this is the part I sing the most, but there's so many other parts of this song.
I think it's coming up right here.
Where the beat comes in?
No, not here. Keep going. Right here. Laughing gas, these
hazmat, fast cat. You think that's the hook right there?
Yeah.
See, we switched it, man, many times. Like, even the beginning.
That was a familiar part, too. I loved Damon Albarn so much.
Didn't Gorillaz just put something new out in the last 6 months?
I think so.
I think they did.
What were we listening to on the R&B charts? Well, it was the same song that was number one on the pop charts. Come back,
That's so funny.
We Belong Together was number one on both charts.
Crossing over.
Yeah, the number one movie this week in 2005 was, I'll play you probably the most famous clip from this movie. There's several different quotes that people love, but here's one of my faves.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
40-year-old virgin.
God, it's been that long?
Yeah, 15 years ago this week, number one at the box office.
Wow.
And finally, Do you know this TV theme? Because people were watching it this week in 2005. Check this out. This is the theme to Desperate Housewives.
Oh, yes.
I never watched it. You, Barnes?
Never did, but man, that thing got huge.
Ooh. It was massive this week in 2005.
All right, please rate, review, and subscribe. Thank you to Dr. Oz, and we look forward to Charles Esten. He plays Ward Cameron on Outer Banks from Netflix. It's one of their biggest shows of the year. Can't wait to have him on next week. Have a great week.